Nick, thanks for doing this once again. How are you today?
Excellent. How are you guys?
We are well. I classified that to a certain extent. I don't think it was all on Arizona. I thought that was a bit of a market correction last night. I didn't think Arizona was 6-3 good. Are you with me on that, or was it just an off game?
I think it was more of an off game. I don't know if I fell too much in love with what they've done in the last month, but I thought that their victory, granted it came on a Hail Mary, but I thought that their victory over the Bills was one of those games where, you know, we've kind of used this phrase a little bit with some of these bubble teams, some of these on the verge teams. It's a game in which you go through the door. You know, you're standing at the threshold, maybe you're hanging onto the door frame, you're leaning into the room, looking around. This is where you actually enter the room. And I thought that game, even if they would have lost, the fact that they were competitive till the very end, and you know, I know Stephon Diggs had the go-ahead touchdown late, but it was a quality opponent that wasn't Seattle, because Seattle's big gripe, even though they played a lot better in the last 3 weeks defensively, for the most part this season it's been they have a really bad defense, and their offense just kind of throws them. Russell Wilson basically throws them to victory. So I hadn't given as much credit to their win over the Seahawks earlier in the year. It was kind of a wacky game, too, the way that it went. You know, Zinkazoff missing the field goal at the end of regulation, then winning it in overtime. There were just a lot of weird things that happened in that game that you kind of chalked up to that. And so I thought that even, you know, their victory over the Bills was basically a miracle. It was still a well-played game and showed me that they could contend with teams that we expect to be in the playoffs and potentially make deep runs. And for a team under a second-year coach in Cliff Kingsbury, that's more than you can ask for. I think this is exactly what you would want to see in your most optimistic projections with this team. So I went into the game last night thinking, well, you know, they're going to probably do something similar. I think Kyler's injury had something to do with it. He just didn't look at 100%. I know he got hit on that throw in the final possession. I think it was third down to Andy Isabella on the pylon. But I think if he's healthy, and if he obviously doesn't get hit, even if he's healthy and he gets hit, I think he puts it on him in a better spot. And it's a touchdown, and we have a different conversation today potentially. So I think the injury played a big part to it, and I just think it was a little bit of an off game for them. Do I think they're going to win the NFC? No. But do I think they're going to give a lot of other teams trouble and probably make the playoffs and give some trouble there? Yes. And that right there is a legitimate team to me, even though they lost to, you know, a division rival in what could end up being, you know, a fierce rivalry for the next few years.
Yeah, it certainly could be, and no question Arizona has taken a step. They just might not be poised to take that giant step that we occasionally see in the NFL this season. As for the Seahawks, I think they reestablished what the hierarchy between the two teams is right now. They also have the easiest schedule the rest of the way in the NFL. They're going to see a lot of NFC East. They're going to see the Jets as well. I don't know what the Niners are going to look like by the time they see them in the final week of the season. If you're handicapping the number one seed in the NFC, where do you put the Seahawks in that race?
Oh, yeah, that's tough, because at their peak, I think Tampa Bay might be the best team in the conference. New Orleans is right there as well when they have Drew Brees available, and they've been coming on strong as of late. Seattle, I had them up there earlier in the year, but and any of the defense has played better, but I still don't trust it. So I think they're a team that hosts a game on divisional or on wild card weekend, and they're probably the three seed. I kind of expect Tampa Bay to finish strong. I expect New Orleans to finish pretty strong, and I know Seattle is you know right there with them, but because of that defense, they're a three seed. That's what I think.
Well, and it's interesting because you can have a better record and not be the better team. Green Bay was an example of that to me last year. They were 13-3, but we knew they weren't really 13-3. And I wonder if Seattle gets that this year by virtue of their schedule down the stretch. Not necessarily that same record, but that they're a little more inflated by whatever record they finish with and whatever seed they get, as opposed to a New Orleans or a Tampa Bay, which might be the better team, but because of some injuries and attrition along the way, might not get the same number of wins. Are you buying what Sean Payton is selling with Taysom Hill being the guy this Sunday?
I'm a skeptic just because, I mean, Taysom Hill is good for a completion or two a game in a situation where a defense has to adjust on the fly. But, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do, if they reshape their entire offense going into this weekend and the next, you know, maybe two or potentially 3 weeks, depending on how fast Drew Brees can heal from what sounds like a really painful injury. I'm not a huge believer, but I am. I'm more of a believer in Sean Payton being able to scheme it up and figure out how to put his team in positions to win. And their defense has played a lot better as of late too. You know, their pass rush is really coming on. Getting Marcus Davenport back helped them a lot. Trey Hendrickson is near the top of the league in sacks right now. I think he's top 10 or 15 in pressures as well. So he's having a career year as well. And as a unit, they've just kind of really come together in the last few weeks to basically shift from the old Saints, which we looked at as, you know, this is a team that has to, you know, kind of like the Seahawks this year, they have to throw their way to victory. They got to rely on Drew Brees to get you there. And now they're more of a balanced team. So, I think that Taysom Hill's a downgrade. I probably would have gone with Jameis Winston in that scenario. I'm curious, and I don't know if we'll ever know, at least not until after this season, why Sean Payton made this decision. Maybe it blows up in his face. Maybe it blows up in my face. It ends up being great. Who knows? That's kind of the fun of the NFL is when you have changes like this. It at least gets the eyes on the game, and you don't know what to expect. But it's going to look different. It's definitely going to look different. And it gives a lot of ammunition to the people who believe that Taysom is QB1 of the future, which I also don't believe in. But we'll see. I could be wrong.
We are lockstep there. I don't believe he's the QB of the future either. When you have more tackles than completions and you're 30 years old, I think that tells you something. But, hey, you and I, we don't do it for a living in the same way that Sean Payton does. Nick Shook, you can follow him at the Nick Shook on Twitter, around the NFL, on NFL.com. He joins us here this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. That game has suddenly become the most intriguing game of the early slate for me because of everything surrounding the quarterback. But prior to that, I probably would have made the case for the Ravens and Titans. Which team has more to prove heading into this weekend?
I would say the Ravens. You really can't explain to me, other than the fact that there was inclement weather in New England, why they lost that game to the Patriots last week. I mean, that's not a Patriots defense that we've looked at this year as being a very specific or especially stout one. And you couldn't do it much of anything offensively outside run the ball, which has kind of been the case for the Ravens for a while now. And it's not so much a criticism of Lamar as it is of scheme and personnel. You know, I think they're missing that the three tight ends they used to roll with last year that they no longer have. It's basically just Mark Andrews. And now that Nick Boyle got hurt, you know, it's basically it. You know, you don't have the Hayden Hurst anymore. You can go as far back as, even like a Max Williams or, you know, some of those other guys. And they lack that personnel at tight end. I don't think they have a true number one receiver for Lamar. I think they're just not a very good passing offense around Lamar, surrounding him. And I think that hurts them when they get in a situation where they have to try to fight their way back into a game. If they can get a lead and then force a couple turnovers early, they're one of the better teams in the NFL. But if they have to come back from a couple score deficit, or they have to figure out how to move the ball quickly in a monsoon against New England, who's still coordinated by, you know, the greatest coach of all time in Bill Belichick, you know, that's a tough request. That's a tough task to accomplish. And I think it kind of woke some people up because, you know, starting this year, I know that they fell to the Chiefs early in the season, but the Chiefs, you thought, well, they're probably not going to lose maybe but one more game the rest of the year, and the other loss was to the Steelers. This one's different. This is the Chiefs and Steelers are on a different level than where the Patriots are. And suddenly it made me think, oh, well, maybe the Ravens aren't as good as we expected them to be. Now, I know they missed some guys defensively as well, but they need to bounce back and have a strong outing against a team that, by the way, knocked them out of the playoffs last year in an upset. So that starts with stopping Derrick Henry and then expands from there. They need to get into a rhythm early. They need to prove to me that their offense is not on its way to being broken, because while they're still way up there in statistics when it comes to rushing the ball, it's not a balanced attack anymore. And I have a hard time putting in my full faith and confidence in a team like that going into the playoffs. When you know that they're a little bit one-dimensional, and that's not good to be at this point in the season.
You said the Chiefs and the Steelers in that tier. Certainly the record puts the Steelers there, though there are many who have more questions about that team, despite them being 9-0, than the Kansas City Chiefs. What have you seen enough of to say, hey, that is the tier? It's those two teams, not the Chiefs by themselves.
They found ways to win every style of game. I think that's probably their strongest point to make their case at this point. Their defense is very good, leads the league in pressures. It's the old school Steelers type of defense. It's going to harass the quarterback. It's going to force the opposition into making mistakes, turning the ball over. They have the guys in the back end to take advantage of that, whether it's Minkah Fitzpatrick or Joe Hayden, those types of guys. They missed Devin Bush, but Robert Spillane's been a nice little replacement for them. And overall, they've basically caught themselves in situations where they've blown teams out, like the Browns, and they pulled up a 24-7 lead on them before you knew it. And then they had to come back and beat a bad Dallas team in Dallas with a couple, late scoring drives with a somewhat hurt Ben Roethlisberger, and then had to stand up at the end of the game and stop Garrett Gilbert, of all people, from leading them to a comeback victory. So they've proven to me that they can do it on the road, they can do it at home, they can do it in different conditions, they can do it from different margins of victory. And it's a body of work that's hard to argue with. I mean, I know undefeated is one thing, but winning in many different fashions with the same guys and relying on the same guys, and even weathering some personnel losses is the most impressive part to me. I would be super intrigued to see how they play against the Chiefs, because I still think the Chiefs are at another level. But I think that would end up being a high-scoring game because they don't have a ton of faith in the Chiefs' defense. I know it's been a little bit better somewhat recently, but it's still not the group that I think we saw put it together down the stretch last year. So until we get to that point, I'm going to have to see the Steelers get beat and get beat in not resounding fashion, but in somewhat of a statement loss, not a last-second loss or something like that, for me to lose any confidence in them right now.
You're right. They found a way to win a bunch of different styles of games. Their running game is a little bit scattered, not as consistent probably as we're used to seeing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. My other question is about Ben Roethlisberger. I don't have him in the Drew Brees category of, I don't know how far he can push the ball downfield, but I also think he's lost a little bit of that I haven't seen that same drive of the football when he's got to go deep that I've seen in the past. Have you witnessed that as well, or am I reading too much into it?
I think that's more an aesthetic thing than anything, because I think he still operates the offense at an elite expert level, and I think that's what they really missed last year. His command of the offense, his poise, obviously we know it's very difficult for him to get sacked because he's so big, but also his ability to convert the third down, to keep his offense moving. They're not going to put up 50 points a game, but they're liable to hit you for a few big plays before you know it, and kind of surprise you. And his experience has shined this year, and it's a massive upgrade. I mean, you're right. He's not quite in that Breeze elite level category, when they were in their prime or whatever, but he's still really good. And if it wasn't for Alex Smith this year, he'd be a shoo-in for a comeback player of the year, and he's a huge reason. I mean, I looked at the Steelers when they had to go without him for a few plays against Dallas, and Mason Rudolph came in and was like, oh, no, here comes the wheels falling off the bus again. Here we go. If that's what you're thinking, I know that quarterback is obviously the most important position in all of sports, but if that's what you're thinking with a team that's undefeated and has a defense like that, and you immediately lose that much confidence in them because they lose Ben Roethlisberger, then that's how valuable he is to that team. And I think he's the main reason. He's not the only reason. He is the main reason that they're undefeated right now and one of the favorites in the conference.
Nick Shook of NFL.com joining us this morning on the Scott Rintoul Show. You talk about limitations on the quarterback. Where are we at in that discussion with regards to Phillip Rivers and the Indianapolis Colts? Have you seen him adapt better throughout the course of this season to make you believe that maybe the ceiling's higher than it has been in the past for a Phillip Rivers-led team?
I wonder how much of that is being in a new environment and having a defense that's a lot better when it has Darius Leonard on the field than when not. Phillip Rivers has been up and down this year. I keep going back to that performance they had against the Browns where he just did not look good. I mean, he looked old, and he has looked old at times this year, but he's also made the plays and kind of not played. He's played within himself this year, which I think is the best situation for him and for his team's success. I don't know how much I trust the Colts. I thought that win over the Titans was a stunner. And the Titans have proven to be a little unreliable when it comes to games like that. So, I don't know how far his Colts really go. I don't have a ton of confidence in them. If you were asking me percentage-wise how much confidence in them I have, it wouldn't be very much. But he is the ideal guy that they were looking for to replace Jacoby Brissett and figure out where they are at the position going forward. And he's got them in contention. I don't know if their 6-3 is quite as legitimate as maybe some of the other 6-3 AFC teams. But we're in that weird space right now where we're at week 10, 11, and yet we still don't know who some of these teams are. Like, if you ask me about the Browns, I know that they run the football well. I don't know much about them. I know their defense struggles, and I don't know much about them otherwise. And that's after watching them every week. It's watching all these teams every week. I still don't know all that much about the Colts. I think they do go as Phillip Rivers goes, but I don't think they're as reliant on him to go win them a game as some other teams are. And I think at his age, And in this situation, that's probably the best situation you could think of or you could ask for out of him, is a guy who is going to get you in position to win, doesn't necessarily need to go win you the game, isn't going to make too many mistakes, except for that game against Cleveland. He's not going to make too many mistakes that are going to lose you a game. So, I mean, they're in contention. We'll see in the next few weeks who they really are, and then we'll probably revisit it about week 15 and be able to more accurately talk about it.
Yeah, it's funny. That's kind of the way you describe Philip Rivers' career overall. Hey, man, it's really good, except for this and this. It's kind of like that loss to the Browns.
Yeah. Earlier in his career, there were times where I would trust him to go win you a game. And, you know, when the Chargers were really at their peak in the late first decade of the 2000s, that was a situation where I was like, yeah, you know, I could see him going out there. He's up there. He was up in the top 10 quarterbacks of the NFL at the time. And he could go out there and get it. He's not that guy anymore, but he's still capable of doing more that is good than bad. And I think that's all you can ask for when you sign a guy at his age.
The Vikings are 4-5 after starting 1-5. What chance do you give them of making the playoffs?
A decent chance. It's going to be difficult to do it divisionally, but I think that they do have a decent chance of that extra playoff spot. They have come on really strong. You know, they're still pretty far behind the Packers at 7-2, and if you look at wild cards, one of the wild cards is going to come out of the NFC South. The other one probably comes out of, one of the other ones comes out of the West, and potentially both of them come out of the West. So they have some ground to still make up, but they've played really good football lately. Dalvin Cook's return has a lot to do with that, of course. And so does their defense, which has undergone a ton of personnel changes in the offseason. You had a lot of veterans depart. You're relying on a lot of younger guys in the secondary, Jeff Gladney, Cam Dantzler among them. But, you know, you got to give credit to Mike Zimmer, because he's a guy, that's like Aaron Rodgers said a few weeks ago, these guys always going to scheme up a good game. He's always going to, you know, cause problems for you and make games difficult. You're never going to have an easy game against him, even if his personnel isn't quite there. They're starting to gel defensively. They're starting to come together. They're playing a lot better on that side of the ball, and then they're able to control possession and establish a rhythm in a situation that's good for Kirk Cousins because of the play of Dalvin Cook, who you can rely on. You can give him the ball 25, 30 times a game. He's going to rip up yards. He's a threat in the passing game. We saw that with the 50-yard screen he took for a touchdown against in that stunning win over the Packers. If they can continue to play at that level offensively, which I have full confidence they will, because Justin Jefferson continues to prove that he was a good pick and is replacing Stephon Diggs pretty well. Adam Thielen's a great receiver. And they're doing what they need to do to win the close ones as well, which is what they weren't doing earlier in the season. So they're kind of coming together at the right time, and they have enough time to really mount a push. I don't see them going 11-5, but I could see them going 9-7 and maybe even 10-6 if they really rip off a run here. And at that point, if you're talking that record, you're squarely in the hunt for the playoffs and might end up sneaking in at the 6th or 7th wild card. And even though the AFC, I think, is stronger than the NFC, if they get a little help from one of the teams in the NFC West, and by help I mean a couple of those teams choking a little bit, then they might find themselves in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a compelling race. There's no question about that. Nick, always appreciate the time. Keep up the great work on NFL.com, and thank you very much. Enjoy your weekend.
Yep, no problem. Thanks.